Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Mariota, the pass, it's deflected in the air! It is picked off potentially by Washington! It is! It's Kendall Fuller!
Did it again, boys and girls. They found a way to win another game. They've won three in a row, not for the first time this year, for the second time this year. They have a three-game winning streak. That is six out of the last seven. They are 7-5 overall. And as of this moment, they are in the seventh and final spot in the NFC playoff race. Wow. Good morning. A good football game yesterday between two evenly matched teams. That interception in the end by Kendall Fuller off the Daron Payne deflection of a Marcus Mariota second and goal throw pretty much clinched a huge win for Washington. A game similar to the Tennessee game really earlier this year, but in reverse. In that game, if you recall, it was Washington's quarterback Carson Wentz who threw the interception in a goal-to-go situation with the game on the line. Yesterday, they got a favor, returned with what could be a play we look back on at the end of the year and say it was one of the key defining difference-making plays of their season. Because at 6-6 and tied with the Falcons and losing a tiebreaker down the road with the Falcons, that was a massive ending. Now, they would have gotten the ball back had Atlanta scored with time for perhaps Taylor Heinicke to create some magic yesterday where there wasn't necessarily much magic in the passing game. But what a big play by Daron Payne. What a catch by Kendall Fuller. And wow, has this team turned it around, surging into a playoff spot as of now, with two of the biggest games head-to-head against the Giants in a long time, sandwiched in between by their bye week, the latest of any of the NFL teams. Two games that will say a lot about which of the two teams heads to the postseason and which team could get left behind, although it's possible that we are headed to a first in the history of this great NFL. Washington at 7-5, two games over 500, in last place in the NFC East, would be in the playoffs if the season ended today. That's never happened, an entire division making the postseason. Of course, it couldn't happen until 2020 when they expanded the postseason field from six playoff teams in each conference to seven. Nonetheless, if the NFC East produces four playoff teams, it'll be one hell of a feat. What a division it's been. I mean, this is why you cannot, year in and year out, be definitive about anything before an NFL season starts. You really can't even be sure of anything that you're seeing up until really, let's call it late October at this point. I mean, the NFC, least as it's been for years, not predicted to be very good this year. Washington and the Giants, not predicted to be that great. Washington, a little bit better than the Giants. Dallas and Philly to battle it out. Other divisions in the conference, much better. Four of them, the bottom team in the division is 7-5. No division's done what the NFC East has done this late into a season in NFL history since going to the four-division format back in 2002. Philly won last night 40-33 over Green Bay. By the way, they rushed for 364 yards. Jalen Hurts had 156 of those yards, if you weren't up to watch it. They're 10-1. Dallas off the win on Thanksgiving over the Giants is 8-3. The Giants have fallen to 7-4, and Washington, being the only team in the division that hasn't had its bye week yet, is 7-5. Washington moved into the seventh spot in the NFC race because Seattle lost to the Raiders at home in overtime late afternoon, 40-34. What a game that was, as Josh Jacobs ended up with well over 200 yards rushing and over 300 yards in total, setting a Raiders record. We'll get to some of the other NFL later on in the show. So the Seahawks dropped from 6-4 to 6-5 with that loss. By the way, a smell test selection the Raiders were. Smell test another winning weekend, Denton, at 9-5-1 overall, a 4-1-1 NFL Sunday. And man, did the Houston Texans work hard to try to get back and get us the cover at plus 14. They lost by 15. But Seattle is still alive. And of course, Washington, the Giants, the Cowboys, and Seattle right now, more than any of the other teams, are really the teams battling for the three wild card spots in the NFC. I've said this before, or certainly said it last week. I still think Dallas has a shot at winning the NFC East. But whichever team doesn't, between Dallas and Philadelphia, that team will be in the playoffs for sure. Now, Washington, you know, sitting there in the seventh spot, is just a half game behind the Giants, with head-to-head games against the Giants upcoming. And they are sitting there just a game and a half behind the Dallas Cowboys for the five spot in the NFC playoffs. Now, what is not really in play for Washington is the division. If Philly had lost last night, I would have told you that the division is not necessarily out of reach, with the Eagles at 9-2 and Washington at 7-5 at that point. Because even though you're two games back, you still have five left and you split with the Eagles. But the Eagles winning last night in what was a wild game, they are solidly in first place. I'm going to get to everything involved in the game yesterday, which was one of those easy kind of tidy games to look at. There wasn't a whole lot going on in that football game with respect to, you know, craziness or crazy plays or coaching decisions that went wrong, etc. It was one of those games that was fast moving, few possessions, not a lot of plays offensively, because both teams were intent on running the football, which they both did. I mean, hell, we got to the 2-minute warning in the game yesterday at 1:59 p.m. When have you ever seen that in a 1 o'clock start? We were at the 2-minute warning at 1:59 p.m. But I will get to my game take coming up here in just a few minutes. But I was somewhat reticent with respect to spending much time on this. But my God, very late last night, as I was going through my Twitter feed from the day, it was dominated, as I'm sure much of the conversation between you and your friends potentially was yesterday, with what happened before the game. This team is on a roll. They've won 6 of 7. They're 7-5. They are not only a legitimate playoff contender, they are a threat to win a game in the playoffs. And depending on the matchups, who the hell knows? It's hard to put a limit on them, given what the NFC is right now. Philadelphia looked awesome last night. San Francisco, top to bottom, looks like, to me, the best team right now. Dallas certainly has the potential. The Vikings are really good, with the game on the line in close games. But Washington has already beaten Philadelphia. They certainly had a chance to beat the Minnesota Vikings, and I would not put anything past them, including a game on Christmas Eve with another one of the conference's powerhouses, San Francisco. When this regular season is concluded, they will have played Philly twice, Dallas twice, San Francisco, and Minnesota. Very likely the four best teams in the conference. There will be a division winner out of the NFC South. Tampa lost yesterday. They lead the NFC South with a 5-6 record. But what we're going to know in terms of the head-to-heads, where Washington stacks up with some of these teams. But let's get to my what do you got before we get to the game take.
All right.
What do you got?
So, yeah, the Sean Taylor pregame honoring of him on what yesterday was the 15-year anniversary of his passing, with what they sent out in a press release last week was a series of what they referred to as key activations. That sounds like a consultant word to me. Key activations that would include, among other things, the reveal of the Sean Taylor Memorial installation is what they referred to it. They were also launching a limited edition Sean Taylor Legacy Project merchandise line, and a special 21 helmet decal was worn by the Commanders players on their helmets yesterday. The headliner, though, of the day was this ceremony at 11:45 a.m. on the main concourse level in the, I think it's the south end zone area, which, you know, if you've been in the stadium and you're looking out onto the field, if you're behind the actual Redskins bench, it would be the end zone to the right. I'm pretty sure that's where it was. I was not at the game yesterday. But at 11:45 a.m., they activated this Sean Taylor Memorial installation outside on that concourse level. They did it at 11:45 a.m. I don't know if they made people wait. I have no idea how organized the actual ceremony was. I've seen it on Twitter, certainly, but I have talked to many people who were involved and were there. So here are my thoughts on this. First, I want everybody to know, again, my perspective on this. I wasn't there. I talked to several who were there, fans, friends, former players, people associated with the organization, many of whom just reached out to me with basically a text message that started with OMG. I've certainly seen all of the social media feedback to this event. I was tagged on lots of it, which was not very positive. I would certainly say if I pulled this on Twitter, how'd they handle the Sean Taylor Memorial installation activation, that it would be not very well. But I wanted to make sure that before I get to my thoughts on this, that you understood that my reaction, my perspective on this may have been different had I been there. I doubt it, but I wasn't there. So let me get started. First, I'll say this. Whatever that memorial of Sean was, the thing that looked like a mannequin in the window of, like, you know, a Dick's Sporting Goods store. By the way, somebody sent me a tweet that said, "Sheehan, it looked like I was at Herman's." I know that only resonates with a few of you, but Herman's was a sporting goods store back in, like, the 80s in D.C. There was one on Jennifer Street Northwest. I worked there. It was one of the many, many jobs I had. I was one of those kids who, at 13, my dad said, "You're working. Get out and get a job." During the summer and even during school when I wasn't involved in sports. But yeah, I mean, I don't know what that was. Of course, it was not done well. I mean, art is subjective. I understand that. But was that actually art? I don't know. I wasn't expecting a statue because they didn't say that there was going to be a statue. Many of you tweeted me and said, "Where's the statue? That's a statue?" They did not say, to be fair to them, when they described it as an activation of a memorial honoring Sean, that it was going to be a statue. Now, they did not say it was going to be a glass-encased mannequin made out of wires with no face and a jersey and pants that didn't match, and really looked like they went into like a training camp bin to fish out late last week. It really looked like one of the things we've seen with this franchise, remember, in recent years, kind of like a rush job. Like, hey, you know, we need something that looks like Sean Taylor by Sunday. Come on, guys, get on it. We've only got a few days left. I didn't personally think that whatever that was supposed to be done would be well done, but that one was not well done, clearly. I'm not here to say what some were saying, that it was disrespectful to Sean's memory. I don't know if that's true or not. I just don't think, you know, it didn't look like something that would have expected in the activation of a memorial of Sean Taylor on the 15th anniversary of his passing. It really did look more like kind of a display case at a department store. But I think, you know, I'm not here to offer up solutions on what it should have looked like. You know, if I were involved in like the meeting, the creative meeting, maybe the one, you know, 30-minute meeting to discuss this, if they even had that, I would have probably suggested something like, you know, whatever you do, capture Sean in one of his moments. You know, to me, the moment is the dive into the end zone in Philadelphia after he picked up the loose ball on the ground and returned it for a touchdown on New Year's Day 2006, clinching a playoff berth and a 31-20 win over the Eagles, which, by the way, clinched a playoff trip to Tampa Bay and a playoff win. The last one this organization had 17 years ago was the last playoff win they had. I mean, I don't know that anybody in the organization would have remembered that play or would have known about that play. But, you know, capturing Sean in a Sean moment, there were plenty of Sean moments. That one, to me, the number one moment. But I can't sit here and tell you that I would have had a lot of great ideas, but it wasn't my job to come up with the ideas. So number one is clearly, whatever that was, it wasn't well done. Number two, and I want to make myself clear on this, because I do totally feel the same way most of you do, which it looked like a fourth grade art project. I wasn't super angry or emotional about this yesterday. And I tweeted something yesterday that said, essentially, look, at this point, as long as the family doesn't have a problem with it, let's move on. Let's get to the second half of the game. Because I think I tweeted something out at halftime. And I think some people misinterpreted what I said. I'm, of course, I understand they botched it, okay? But I wasn't surprised that they botched it. I wasn't angered by them botching it. I don't really feel anything about a lot of this stuff anymore. I expect this. We should all expect this. This is what we've gotten. And for me, like, it's basically, we're down to this. Until Dan and Tanya are gone, I'm going to expect their organization to be a complete and utter S show when it comes to anything that requires thought, planning, and execution. You know, for years, this franchise has been so limited in so many ways. I mean, limited intellectually, limited when it comes to being humble, limited when it comes to the ability to be self-aware, limited in its historical knowledge of its own franchise that it's running, you know, limited in understanding its customers, limited in understanding how to treat its customer base. You know, every possible way you could get things wrong, they've gotten it wrong. We all understand this, and we understand now with years of exposure to it that the root cause is the owner. So until he leaves, it's not going to change. You know, so I have come to expect this, and it doesn't anger me. There is one thing, however, and this is the thing that I'm going to kind of end with in this conversation, and then we're going to get to the game. I continue to be, you know, somewhat angry about those past players, teams, coaches, and how they've kind of been treated in this last year and a half of Sean. You know, and I want to preface this with, I know how important Sean Taylor is to many of you. For some of you, he's the best thing that you've known about this franchise. I get it. I understand it. I empathize. For some others, especially those of you like me who are a bit older and live through the greatest coaches and players and teams in this team's history, you don't perhaps see Sean in the same way. But I hope yesterday was the last time we do Sean for a while. It's enough. Not because I don't think Sean Taylor was a great player on his way to being one of the all-time greats, because I do. Not because I wasn't crushed by his passing 15 years ago yesterday, because that week 15 years ago is a week that is indelible in my mind. It's a week that I will never personally forget, never. It was so tragic. It was so agonizing. It was so, so sad. I'll never forget being woken up with a phone call from my program director at the time, Todd Castleberry, at 4:45 a.m. in the morning, saying, you got to get back in there. He passed away. And that was the morning after we had been told he was doing better and that he was going to survive and he was going to be okay. It was so sad. So sad for his family. So sad for his friends, and so sad for this city that had become a part of what he was building. You know, he was an adopted son, like a lot of those players are. God, he was fun to watch. A lot was lost that day, senselessly. But it seems to me Sean has been obsessed over so much over the last year by this organization that it's become kind of obvious to me anyway that they are in part going to Sean over and over again because, well, A, he's super important to the owner. B, they keep trying to change the conversation about them, which has been deservedly negative for many years, but intensely so over the last 2 years. And their sleight of hand move is Sean. And of course, anytime they try to change the conversation with some sort of an event that requires planning and execution, whether it's, you know, Sean and his jersey retirement or Sean and whatever they did on the other part of the club level, they do it very haphazardly. They do it in a very clumsy way. And that's the nicest way to put to really describe it, because clumsy almost makes them seem like they just made a few mistakes that are understandable, when in fact they make lots of mistakes because they're not very good at doing these kinds of things. You know, the one of my all-time favorite quote coaches was the great John McKay, who, when he left USC in 1975 to take over the expansion Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 1976, he had one great line after another over those first few years when they did not win a game. And he would say about this organization when trying to plan something, they don't plan very well, but they make up for it with terrible execution. It really is a total clown show when they try to do these things. But I don't want to see any more Sean Taylor days for a while. I don't want to see any more memorials. I don't want to see any more jersey retirements. And it's for three reasons. One, it's become too much of their go-to move. I think we can all see right through it. You can only go to the changeup so much before, you know, batters start whacking them out of the park. Number two, they don't do it well. You know, it always ends up being a source of embarrassment. And it's time for the embarrassment to be shared almost equally with others not named Sean Taylor. It's like, it seems like all the Sean Taylor stuff ends up in embarrassment. I don't want to see him attached to that. Thirdly, and I know this angers some of you because I've said it in the past several times, Sean Taylor does deserve to be honored by this organization in certain ways and remembered forever. But if anybody in the organization knew anything about the organization, they would know that there's an appropriate order to the honoring of the past. Sean's jersey should not have been retired when it was retired. After the organization decided to start retiring jerseys after the only retired jersey was Sammy Baugh's, and they were protected, but they decided to start retiring them. There were several that should have gone before Sean. Bobby Mitchell definitely should have been the next one in line, and he was. But after that, it should have been Sonny, which they're going to do in the season finale this year. My God, help them do it without embarrassment to Sonny, or for that matter, themselves. Charlie Taylor, Daryl Green, Art Monk, John Riggins should have all had their jerseys retired before Sean's was. You know, this is not disrespectful to Sean. You know, I think you can debate whether or not his jersey should be retired, period. But I've always said it's an outlier in terms of a decision that can be made by the owner. It's a special case, obviously, because of the terrible tragedy. But, you know, if there was going to be a statue, which there wasn't, and they never said there would be, but if there was going to be something of significance that would stand in front of the stadium or on a concourse level, number one on that list is Joe Jackson Gibbs, period. End of discussion. And that should be it. You know, he's the first face sculpted on the Washington Redskins' Mount Rushmore. Again, I know how much Sean meant to so many of you, and I respect that. And I was just as crushed. But the organization before Dan arrived, before Sean arrived in 2004, was actually a great organization. It was a winner. 2 NFL championships, 3 Super Bowl titles, and many Hall of Fame players and coaches. I remember Sean picking up that ball in the Philadelphia game on New Year's Day and returning it for a touchdown and diving headfirst into the end zone. Thrilling. Okay, I would have done something like that. But the scant few memories we have of players and games from the last 25 years, including the ones involving Sean, are a fraction. They pale in comparison to what came the 25-plus years before Dan arrived. This was a different organization before Dan bought the team. It was a winner. It was classy. It was smart. Now it's the opposite of that. There's no way that if Sean Taylor had played for that group, the pre-Snyder group, that his memory would be handled in such a disorganized way over and over as it has been the last year. I'll never forget Sean. I hope the family is happy. And as long as they are pleased with yesterday, then that's fine. You know, we can move on. Their feelings are really important. I'm not discounting the feelings of many of you who are really angry about yesterday. And we're really angry about the jersey retirement ceremony. My only request here is that it's over. All right? This is it. I predicted Denton over the summer. I said, I guarantee you there's going to be another go-to Sean move at some point during the season. I mean, my God, they've retired his jersey already. But trust me on this, there's going to be another Sean moment or two. They've been obsessed with it. And I know, again, this is not in any way meant to say I don't understand the feelings that the owner has for him, that many of you have for him, that I have for him. But it's over now, for at least the time being. Let's wait 5 years until the 20-year anniversary of his passing. And to be honest with you, you know, the passing date, let's, you know, perhaps find something less sad. Everything about Sean makes me nostalgic. I loved those years. I loved him as a player. I loved him in number 36. I loved him in number 21. Yesterday, the organization did what it did, and I expected it. They did what they thought was a good idea poorly. Self-inflicted. Didn't need to happen. Ben Standing at 8, my complete game take when we return. This is the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, theteam980.com, and we are free and live on the Odyssey app.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.